that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is Tuesday, the 26th of November. We're doing a round 8 review and a round 9 preview. So first things first, if I can, if you're listening to the program, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, I think SoundCloud, wherever you're listening, hit subscribe so that an episode is automatically downloaded and you get an alert when it comes on. And also rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening on, preferably Apple Podcasts. Apparently that's good for the program. And also follow me on Facebook and YouTube. Occasionally I put things up on there that are worth your time. I had some very sweet reviews from people over the last couple of days and weeks. Frenchie, 1991, Joshua Thorne, and Mr. Shadow Stalker all gave very positive reviews, and they were very sweet. I read them and I appreciate them. So thank you to those three and the others who've rated and reviewed the show highly in the past, and to those who've rated it poorly in the past. I appreciate it anyway. I just wanted to, there was a lot of talk about this podcast being very meditative, which I actually take as a great compliment. I've been told that my voice is quite soothing, and you know what, in a harsh and bleak and brutal world, sometimes it's nice to have something soft to listen to. But I just wanted to reiterate what the show is. I only do it as one person, so I'm talking into a microphone, and ideally what I think is I'm talking to you through whether it's your iPhone or phone or radio or whatever it is, and you're listening. I'm having that conversation with you. I don't know if you've ever, anyone out there has ever traveled abroad or been away and they've wanted to connect with sports, but you haven't got that group around you, or even if you do, but you don't have that friend who's also as big a fan of the NBL as you are, or any code, but in this particular instance, the NBL, and they're not that big a fan. You don't find you have someone who you can talk to on that level. This is that podcast. I leave blanks after questions so you could purposely take a minute to think or even shout it out at the radio if you're watching. So that's the motive behind this style of podcast. Without further goings on, let's jump into the NBL headlines. First and foremost, Corey Webster was injured in the New Zealand Breakers' most recent game. Looked like a pretty badly rolled ankle. Didn't come down on anyone's foot, which is why it looked bad to me. There's been no timeline given on whether he'll miss games or not, or if so, how many. And that's of 5:30 p.m., so perhaps that changes. Next, Scotty Hobson, staying with the Breakers. Scotty Hobson is hopeful for a return this Saturday against Illawarra. It would be my impression that he will definitely play this game because he really wants to get in front of those NBA scouts that are there for LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton. Although I suppose he's probably been in front of a lot of NBA scouts already, but nonetheless, he'll want to get back into that one for sure. The other headline I had was I thought Taylor Braun of the Brisbane Bullets was suspended for rough play and wouldn't play against Adelaide, but he must have entered a guilty early plea, got a $750 fine, and still played in that game, thankfully. And then obviously the other big, not NBL headline, but certainly Basketball Australia headline is Andre Lamanis has resigned as head coach of the Boomers, but we'll go into that in greater detail towards the end. Let's jump on to best things in the NBL media this week. The Trash Talk Basketball Show, I don't know the exact title of it, but I saw it advertised on the latest broadcast. I think it was the Illawarra-Cairns game. That apparently is going to arrive either today, Tuesday, or Wednesday is what I've been told. And that's going to be hosted by Felix von Hoff and Peter Hooley, and I think we're all pretty excited for that. I love that podcast, and now they're taking it into on-camera form, so that's pretty cool. The other sort of NBL media thing is I've kind of worked out what my dream commentary trio is for NBL 20, and it is as such. Brad Rosen, Chris Anstey, and I think Andrew Gaze. Gaze, funnily enough, is the one. I'm dead set on those first two, Brad Rosen and Chris Anstey. And my third sort of bounces between Gaze. Sometimes it's Homicide when he's really excited. But those two are certainly two of the three. Lock them in. And that third spot went to Andrew Gaze this week. Still trying to, if you're there at home thinking, who's your dream NBL trio from what we've seen so far through the 8 rounds, let me know. Let's jump on now to the review of round 8. First game of the round was Brisbane hosting Adelaide. Brisbane winning this game 106-104. Close game. Patterson with the big offensive rebound down the end in the putback. High scoring, not a lot of defense. That's kind of the the way both of these teams go. My question coming out of this game was, is Eric Griffin consistently good? Now, if you know the rounds games, you know what he did against New Zealand. But nonetheless, at this point, when I first watched this, I thought, is he consistently good? Is this game we saw from Eric Griffin consistent for him? Can he replicate it? Griffin seems to me like a low basement, high ceiling guy. And that's why it was good to see him go up against Brisbane and Taylor Braun, because Taylor Braun is that consistently efficient, but never outstanding type of player. So it was good to see the two of them kind of go back and forth. Looking at Griffin, Griffin is third in turnovers, second in fouls per game, and his assist to turnover ratio is 0.41, second last, ahead of only Nate Jiwai. When I talk about being a player who's consistent, this is what I'm talking about. Those stats, you don't want to be high in turnovers, you don't want to be high in fouls, and you want to have a good turnover to assist ratio, and he doesn't have any of that. 0.41. So for every turnover, he gets half an assist. To put it in perspective, Taylor Braun is the league leader in assist to turnover ratio at 6.6. But in Griffin's defense, assist to turnover ratio doesn't win you games. Points on the board does. And I think the eye test tends towards Griffin. The stats tend towards Braun. Anyway, this game, though, the other big thing was obviously Kadee getting tossed from really soft and was definitely a byproduct of over-officiating. Slapped the ball, kind of ran into someone. Like, I didn't think either were an unsportsmanlike foul, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do is refs are going to actually open their eyes and have a think about things is the answer to that. Adelaide gave up 5 offensive rebounds late in the fourth quarter. Clearly a symptom of Joey Wright not playing Daniel Johnson late in those minutes on the floor. I mean, that's an easy observation when Patterson makes a play like he does, but 5 offensive rebounds in the last 3 minutes, I think, is what I counted. Could be wrong there, but something like that. You got to have your 7-footer on the floor. Plus, he's the type of guy, win or lose, you want to be closing with Daniel Johnson anyway. Wasn't on the floor. Cam Glidden played 13 minutes in this game. That was 8th most for Brisbane. That's the way it's been all year. I mean, we're at round 8 now, going into round 9. 13 minutes per game, 8th off the bench. That's kind of where he's sitting. I don't know if that's best for him. Well, I know it's not best for Cam Glidden. I'm starting to think it's not the best for the Brisbane Bullets either. What's interesting with this game was Joey Wright went with Brendan Tees over Dan Dillon. And Tees had a huge output, over 20 points. Played great, again going at the basket. A little bit more of a reliable shooter than Dillon. Didn't play later in the round because was hurt, but nonetheless, nice little 1-2 from them. The talk about getting good returns on low fee, that's Tees and Dillon. For me, though, the best in this game was Patterson, Sobey's first half. I think he had sort of 25 points in the first half. And then Will Magnay, he came on and really inspired them back to stay in front, I think it was, with, you know, 2 or 3 dunks in a row. Harry Froling was made to look very, very small. And that was that game. Brisbane 106, Adelaide 104. Let's jump on to the second game of the round. This was the game of the round. There was, I mean, maybe Illawarra Cairns, but boy, this was right up there too. Southeast Melbourne hosting Sydney. Sydney winning this game 90-86. Southeast Melbourne went 1 of 7 from 3 in the first half combined and only had 4 free throw attempts. They were terrified of Bogut. They were terrified of Bogut in the first half. Plus a few funky lineups. I saw a bit of Dan Trist out there at one point and a bit of Benson, who Bogut just ate up. Benson was played off the floor by Andrew Bogut. Bogut hung 4 points on him fast, and I don't think Benson came back in after that. But some funky lineups with a lot of Trist. I think there was a time when it was sort of a lot of bench guys. Trist, Adnam, Gibson, someone else. Yeah, and that's probably not the way Southeast Melbourne want to do it. But anyway, then in the second half, Creek and John Robertson showed how good they are. Robertson nailing massive threes after very high pick-and-roll action, and Sydney had no answer for that. If you saw the game, Robertson would be getting a pick at about good 2 or 3 meters outside of the three-point line right at the top, high pick-and-roll, and then he just had all that space to come off and get his shot off because he's a smaller guy. He needs a bit more space, and Sydney just had no answer. Obviously, they don't want to drag Bogut out of the keyway. And then when that screen is set high, he's stepping into the three-point shot, which is what Sydney don't want to give away. They want the screen being at the arc, and they give up the mid-range jumper. This was pretty good coaching by Simon Mitchell. It was really obvious to the telecast, and all those guys brought up the same point. I forget who did the call. But nonetheless, like, what is the answer to that for Sydney? It kind of negates Bogut. So it's a really interesting strategy for South East Melbourne and every other team going forward. Creek's last play. A lot of talk about this on social media. He should have shot it. He had a decent look at it from the angle I saw on the broadcast, and had Dane Pinot in perfect offensive rebounding position. But, you know, c'est la vie. Made a bad play. There was 50 of them during the game. This one just happened in the last 20, 30 seconds. So, you know, it's the one that gets talked about. In the second half, Southeast Melbourne went 6 of 15 from the outside. That ability to go from shooting, what was it, 1 of 7 to 6 of 15, you know, nearly 50% from the three-point line. But to do it after a glut, that's why I'm a big believer in the Southeast Melbourne team. Like, they're not just a seeing when we're winning type team. They're able to go down 18 points and come back against the Sydney Kings, who are, you know, the best in the league. I just want to make particular mention of the big threes that were hit by a couple of sort of role players in this game. Daniel Kickett hit one in the third to bring the score. I think scores were tied, and he put Sydney back up atop. And it just arrested the Phoenix momentum. They were really pushing. And then Sean Bruce made a big three at the 5 minute and 30 second mark of the fourth that, again, did the same thing. And then Ben Madjan hit a big one with 1 minute and 12 seconds left. He'd done nothing all game. I think it was his only score. You know, to do something like that, you got to be a classy player. I've worried about Madjan, whether they're getting the most out of that starting spot in his minutes. Maybe they should either take him out of the starting lineup or sort of subtract some of his minutes, give him to Stevens. Hard to say. Sydney Kings shot 67% from the foul line in this game, and it seems to be a worrying trend for them. That seems to be where they're at. They've had a number of close games where they lose or drop points at the line. I think Will Weaver said it in the loss to Melbourne. They missed a bunch of free throws and sat around that high 60s, low 70s. I don't think that's going anywhere, and that's an issue. When you can't get fouled and go to the line in late game situations, you're in a bit of trouble. So it's a bit of a slight Achilles heel for the Kings. Offensive rebounds, 15-6 in favor of Southeast Melbourne. That was a symptom of Dane Pinot, plain and simple. I was super impressed by Southeast Melbourne in this game. And to people spitting out they have a hard road schedule coming up, they're not going to make the four, I say, what has a greater degree of difficulty? Coming back from 18 points down against the Sydney Kings in this game, albeit at home, or playing, which is in the next couple of rounds, at Brisbane, at Melbourne, at New Zealand, Illawarra at home, at Cairns. They've really only got three, what I see as three tough games, because you have to play all these teams on the road. It's not like Southeast Melbourne are playing any more road games than anyone else. Their tough ones are Perth at home, at Sydney, and at Cairns. The others I'm not that scared about. Adelaide might be a toughie, but I'm not really worried about this team at Brisbane or at Cairns. Cairns are a team that kind of, they're up, they're down. I don't think they're a chance to steal that fourth spot because of their inconsistency. But let's keep going. The other question I have, if you're thinking about our Southeast Melbourne, that fourth seed, the question I would ask to you is, name a better duo in the NBL than Creek and Robertson, especially from the sub-500 teams, Brisbane, Adelaide, New Zealand, Cairns. Are Creek and Robertson better than Randall and Drimmick, Lamar Patterson and Sobey, Machado and Oliver? I think they're better than all those three. I could hear a conversation on Machado and Oliver just because they play you know, such vast different positions. But Mitch Creek's better than Cam Oliver in a greater sense than Machado could be argued to be better than Robertson. So no, I'm not worried about this Southeast Melbourne team locking up that fourth seat at all. I'm a little bit worried just because of their record, but that's who I'm thinking is the best. Third game of the round. The Cairns Taipans hosted the Perth Wildcats at home, Cairns winning this one 91-84. This result really shocked people, as it did me, mainly because Perth had a lead and conceded it. That's not a Wildcat style. But the shock, why the shock? And I guess the question is, it all comes down to how highly you rate both Tarico White and the Cairns Taipans. I rate both quite highly. I think the Cairns on their day are really good. Chris Anstey put it best. They have size, speed, and shooting. It's hard to defend against those three things. I think Tarico White's a fantastic player. He's clearly the Perth Wildcats' second best player. But then my question is, how many teams could crisscross the country and win without their second best player? Or even, you know, really come close? could the Sydney Kings go over to Perth and win without Bogut or Casper Ware or Jayshon Tate, whichever way you want to slice their second best player? Could Southeast Melbourne go anywhere and win without Robertson? But we don't pay the Perth Wildcats that we don't give them that leeway. Cairns shot 4 of 20 from the outside quarters 1 through 3 and then shot 8 of 10 in the fourth quarter from the arc. They just caught fire. Kwatnoy in particular and Krizlovic hit too. It was nuts. The lineup that did it for the Taipans was Machado, Newball, Kwatnoy, Krizlovic and Oliver. That was cooking. Krizlovic kind of really stepped up in this game big time. He was able to sort of help on defense. The matchup was just better. If that's one of their better lineups, if he's up to the challenge. The problem is knowing when he is and isn't, because he's not that consistent NBL performer. Or maybe he is, but he has to mature into it. So most importantly for the Wildcats, Dario Hunt came out for crunch time. Wagstaff in, I think around about sort of the 3.5 minute mark thereabout. This was the first game that the Wildcats have lost when Dario Hunt plays over 20 minutes. I get a serious question for Wildcat fans out there and NBL fans, I guess, in general. Is Dario Hunt the next most likely import to depart the league? You know, you would look at this situation and the best example of it would be Perth last season with Tarico White, where he had a similar bad stretch of form and there was the same conversation. Now, I'm not calling for it. I'm just asking, is he the most likely? The answer is probably not him, but just the way he's getting dragged in crunch time. With Tarico White last year, when he was in bad form and there was this talk, at least he was playing the crunch time and he was filling a position that, you know, is different. Hunt, it just feels like not only is he perhaps not getting the on-court performance, he doesn't seem to be meshing or gelling, or and Gleason doesn't have the confidence. There's a difference between underperforming and confidence, and I don't see that from them. And it's a real, like, you're out of the game for crunch time, and Gleason's just standing on the sideline with his arms folded, no instruction, just like, yep, this is the way of the world, this is the way it's going to be. The Wildcats. It's a time to ask yourself, Perth Wildcats, what you believe. If you've seen Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, what, you know, they did it all last year. Oh, we don't need three imports. We're not going to cut one of our guys, da da da. The Wildcats now, we're going to talk about later in the program, the breakers and culture. The Wildcats now get a chance to sort of see who they really are. Are they willing to cut an import they're not totally happy with at the pursuit of winning? Or are they all for one and one for all? I have heard nothing in the way of whether they're going to get rid of Hunt or not. I think I'm the first person to even suggest it. Not that I'm suggesting it, I'm merely talking about it. But you do see my point. The Wildcats are that type of team that would be like, yep, it's kind of like Rashad Tucker years ago. I've had him on the program. Yeah, it's not quite working out. We think we're going to go with a different direction. They just sort of sneak it in under there. It's like, no, we're not bad people. We're not a bad sports club like everyone else. We're different, you know. One for you to think about, Wildcat fans. Side note, people talk about wanting to return to a post game in basketball, or like, you know, throw it down the post and post scoring. You got to change the way the game is called in the post. Nate Jawai is fouled damn near every time he makes a play. He is 31st in free throw attempts per game. And if you adjust per 40 minutes, because he doesn't obviously play the thing, he's 17th. Nate, let me just say that again. He is 31st in free throw attempts per game. When it's minutes adjusted, he is 17th. Nate Jawai is 17th. So when he catches it in the paint and is manhandled every time he catches it, he's not getting to the line as much as 16 other guys. It's wrong. He gets hit every time. In the telecast, they were even saying it, like, oh, Jawai's leaving a lot of points on the rim. Yeah, he's leaving a lot of points on the rim because he's got three people hanging off every arm. That's something I'd be tapping the refs on the shoulder. The unsportsmanlike foul is something we all like to talk about, but how the game is called in the paint is more important, and especially when it pertains to Nate Jawai and Sean Long. Talk about that later on. Let's jump on to the fourth game of the round. Melbourne hosted the Brisbane Bullets, the second of a back-to-back for the Bullets, and the Melbourne won this one pretty handedly, 108-94. No Casey Prather for Melbourne again. Big story coming out of this game was Sean Long was in a foul mood, throwing a hissy fit, Probably get a bit pissed off if I said that, but nonetheless, it was. It was a pouting performance, and the drama between he and Dan and Dean Vickerman continues. Again, I was talking about it with Jawai, but the way contact was called in the paint bothered Long a lot. He was subbed out in the fourth quarter at the eight-minute mark and was pouty on the bench the whole time. The camera was on him. We all saw it. I really liked Liam Santa Maria on the telecast on this one. Was saying how Lamar Patterson is out of shape, and as a result, not getting the lift on his attacks at the hoop and thus leaving points on the rim. And I thought, thank you, Liam Santa Maria. That was a gutsy call from him and a gutsy and honest assessment. And I liked it and I appreciated it because it's true. The amount of times Patterson had his shoulders by his defender and was going at the basket and put it up on the rim and had to, you know, pop it up a little bit more or put a bit of English on it to get it in. And he was overcompensating for the lack of lift and it didn't go in. It was painfully obvious. And look at the stats. Patterson, 4 of 19, 21% from the field, 4 of 15 from two-point range. So it wasn't like he was just casting up threes and missing. Most of his misses came in the paint or certainly within the arc. Let's have a look at this. So let's look at Lamar Patterson in the second game of a back-to-back. Let's crunch some stats. In the second game of a back-to-back, he's played three, I believe, one of which was a blinder against Southeast Melbourne in round two, when the grind of the season and his, say, lack of shape hasn't quite presented itself, perhaps. He had 30 points on 13 of 21 shooting in that game. I know it's cheating the stats, but what if we remove that game? And we sort of simulate that now we're into the grind of it because his next two came in this round and round five. If you take out the outlier, much like if you're at a figure skating contest, they take the bottom number and they take the top number and they throw it away. If we took out that game, which is cheating the stats, I'll admit, but nonetheless, if you took out that game, he's averaging 12.5 points per game on 26% shooting, 3.5 turnovers per game, compared to his averages of about 19 points per game on 42% shooting and 2.5 turnovers. So the points come way down. The field goal percentage comes way down and the turnovers go up. I think his rebounds and assists certainly improve, but Lamar Patterson on the road, you don't need him passing. Well, you need him passing, you need everyone passing, but you need him scoring and it's not there, especially if you put in the Southeast Melbourne game, he's basically parity. In games of second of a back-to-back. But the trend now, if you look at the trend of it, his second games of back-to-backs are ailing. I meant to have a look at how many back-to-backs they've got and against who and whom. I didn't do that, but maybe on the next podcast we will. But that's the trend. Shea Illy was causing the Brisbane Bullets guard serious problems with his pressure, and it meant Lamar Patterson couldn't get any rest. He had to handle the ball and be there to steady the game. My question for everyone out there, and shout it out of your radio, or just say it politely. What is this Brisbane Bullets best lineup? Who is their best five players? My answer to the question would be, and I mean this, is Lamar Patterson is your point guard. He's the guy who should get every inbounds pass and dribble it up the floor and totally control the pace of the game. So Patterson, Sobey, Kadi, Glidden, and Hodgson. That's their best five. I don't think Braun is better than those guys, especially the way Kadi's been playing. Kadi is the one you could maybe slide Braun over, but the way he's shooting, the way he's playing, I've really liked him this year, and I think that's their best five. So my thought is, why don't the Brisbane Bullets play them all together? And I think they did for a little bit of a stretch of this game, and it's when they looked quite good, and it was at that point where Cam Glidden refused to shoot that three in transition. And that's when that lineup got subbed out. And I thought, oh, that actually looked good with them on the floor. But it was short-lived. And then the other question I had coming out of this game was, because this game was really great to watch. Melbourne are fantastic. I actually sat down and was watching and just thought, holy shucks. You know, the talent on this team, Melo Trimble in particular. Melo Trimble's really good. A lot of people don't like scoring point guards in Australian basketball. They like the purity of a point guard to come down and 2-4 high. I like point guards like Trimble who can shoot, score, pass, do it all, play a bit of defense. That's the thing that he's come around to. He's enjoying being a part of a winning program. He's really excelling in the winning program. Sean Long's still bumping along, still kind of working it out. They're very different people, but Trimble, I've been so impressed. I think he's, you know, NBL second team conversation for sure. But are he, Melo, Trimble and McCarron the best backcourt in the NBL? You could have the conversation with Perth with Tirico White and Bryce Cotton, but, you know, obviously Tirico White's missing some games now, so that makes it a bit tough. But as far on actual skill and ability, maybe they're in there. But I think that's the best backcourt in NBL basketball. Let's jump onto the fifth game of the round. Adelaide hosted the New Zealand Breakers, and Adelaide absolutely creamed them in this one. 117-100. I only watched the first half of this game. Adelaide got up big. I knew the result. I was watching a replay. I didn't feel the need to watch anymore. I got a sense of the game. Corey Webster got hurt in this one. This is where he turned his ankle, as I talked about at the top of the program. I want to say it now in case he misses a lot of time. Corey Webster is all NBL second team of this year based on his form. They're losing a lot of games, which makes it tough to include him, but he's been fantastic. Brilliant. He's scoring like crazy. He's playing. He's the only shining light for that team. Maybe RJ Hampton's a flickering bright light from occasion, but Corey Webster is the only solid desk lamp on for that team, and I've had a lot of fun watching him, and really excited. Speaking of Webster, he was the Breakers' third highest scorer for the game, despite playing only 11 minutes, you know, a quarter of the game, pretty much. Adelaide went on to score 64 points in the paint to New Zealand's 36. What that says to me is, one, that Adelaide totally controlled the pace of play and played the way they want to, going at the rack. New Zealand just couldn't defend the paint. They're not big enough, they're not strong enough, they don't have the aptitude. They need Rob Lowe more than ever. But 64 points in the paint, it shows that Adelaide were getting in there unmolested. And it shows me that the Breakers aren't attacking the hoop well enough. Brandon Ashley grabbed it. They grabbed a lot of offensive rebounds early, and then Adelaide made the adjustment, and it was over, seemingly. If you watched the second half, good for you. I didn't. Tom Abercrombie, 29 minutes, 7 points, 2 of 4 from the field. Guy got up 4 attempts in 3 quarters of basketball. He needs to be big for them going forward. They've lost Lowe. They've lost all these people. We're going to talk about it later. Has he got it in him? You know, at his age and where he's at, can they depend on him for 30 big minutes of sort of 10 to 15 points and a bunch of rebounds? Odds would not be strong. And that's it. That was all I had to take from that game. Let's go to the sixth game of the round. And this game was an absolute... I mean, this is a game that just got... You get fired up watching a game like this, you lose your biscuits. Illawarra hosted Cairns. Illawarra winning 114-106 in overtime. Massive three from the Mellow Ball to send it there. He was incredible. Amazing game from the Mellow Ball. Dominated. 30 points, triple-double. You've seen it all up on social media. I don't need to go through it. Also, the game commentary, the trio for this game had such fun. I commented it on the social media, on Twitter. I just thought it was so much fun watching this game. This is the pinup of the NBL. If an alien came down from outer space and said, well, what is the NBL? I'd probably show him this game because it was so richly entertaining and fun. Sunday Deck and David Anderson have reformed this team. They have turned it around. Those two, I'm not going to say exclusively, but I'd be apportioning a lot of the success to them. Also, the increased activity of Todd Blanchfield. He looked great in this game. Rebounding, coming off screens, hitting shots. He was fantastic. And it's really because LaMelo Ball and David Anderson in the pick and roll are perfect. DA likes to pop and get the long jump shot, maybe the three-point shot. Gives Ball the space to kind of keep moving, keep getting into the keyway, finding people, be it Blanchfield or Conrad or others. Having said that, I as much as they lost, I really respected Scott Machado in this game. Cairns are never out of a game when they have him on the floor. He controls tempo. He turns momentum on a dime. Really good player. He made huge plays to bring the Taipans back into the game and nailed 2 huge three-pointers to tie the game and I think even go ahead late, you know, in the last minute or two of regulation. In the Foundation Club by Matthew Adekponya, I interviewed him recently. There's another podcast. You can go back and have a listen to that. In one of the episodes, they talk about, or Illawarra coach Matt Flynn talks about kills, 3 stops in a row. To me, this team is about kills, getting those defensive stops in a row. But it's also about what I call bits, role players owning a quarter. And really, for Illawarra, it was they got a few of those kills, but more importantly, DA stepped up in the first quarter, and then Conrad stepped up in quarters two through four. He was incredible. So you need that second guy up, and sometimes it's Deck, and you could even argue maybe it was Deck in a couple of these quarters, but it was certainly Tim Conrad and at times Blanchfield. So who's that next guy up who's going to take on a quarter of scoring for them? And as I said, it was those guys. I was surprised that Ogilvie was left in the game after the pushing unsportsmanlike foul on Machado. I mean, Josh Boone is sitting right there, and he's had a sort of change of form in the last couple of days and weeks. I was pretty surprised by that. And Ogilvie, you're lucky you came up with the block after that, and this team came up with the win, because you do that and the Hawks lose. Yikes. Let's talk about the overtime. In overtime, Majuk Deng conceded 4 of the 15 points Illawarra scored, and could have been 6 had Ogilvie tapped in that offensive rebound he was batting at, that he eventually got frustrated about and pushed Machado. So could have been 6 of the 15, or, you know, obviously that would have changed the amount, but, you know, could have been 6. Pretty incredible if you think about it, that one guy is conceding that many points. Doesn't sound like a lot, 4 points, but it looked obvious that it was like, uh-oh. You know, there was one time where a ball just went right by Majuk Deng for the stuff. And if you give up a massive dunk in overtime and that small crowd, small but vocal crowd goes mental, that's worth 10 points. And then the other lapses on defense for Cairns was the pick and roll defense between Cam Oliver and DJ Newball. Gave up 5 points in overtime, just where a pick would be set. It looked like Oliver, they were doing a switch. And then all of a sudden, Oliver would just go back to his man and leave Newball on an island. I don't know whose fault it was, whether it was meant to be a total switch or a hedge and go back to your man. Either way, it didn't look good when a guy with the ball was left wide open to just dribble down the basket, dribble down the keyway and lay it up. Bad look by, I think in particular, probably Cam Oliver, because he was the guy who switched onto the ball and then just miraculously just left the man. You know, I have to watch it again to make sure of it, but something like that. The big three, the stars of this game, is obviously LaMelo Ball, Tim Conrad with 27 points on 76% shooting, and then Scott Machado. They were the stars if I had to go 1, 2, 3. Okay, now let's jump on to NBL talking points. And these have been the biggest conversation starters from around the NBL this week. Or that I think might start a good conversation. First of all, let's talk about the Illawarra Hawks and LaMelo Ball and the lack of Aaron Brooks. First thing I wanted to point out, a lot of people in reference to LaMelo Ball have said stuff like, oh, where were you at 18? You know, what were you doing? This guy's doing this in a great league. And it's very true. The kid's a really good player and everything. But that conversation kind of bugs me about the age. First of all, yes, it is very young. But secondly, where were you at 18? Well, I'll tell you, I can't really tell you where I was or where most people are, but I'll tell you where most people aren't. And where most people aren't at 18 is in the 5th highest income place in the United States, in Chino Hills, the 6th safest city in the United States, and what was regarded as the 3rd best place to live in the western seaboard of the United States, in Chino Hills, which is where LaMelo Ball's from. A lot of people at 18 also didn't have a father who played as a professional sportsman. They also didn't have a family who runs a major basketball clinic that at the very spearhead of it is yourself, your eldest brother, and second eldest brother at the head of it, with a bunch of ex-NBA players giving you constant tutelage, guidance in individuals. As much as LaMelo Ball's a really great player, you can trace a lot of his ability to the great fortune that he has around him. And that's not to say that's the sole reason of his success, but it's certainly a huge degree of his success. The more incredible story, I think, is to ask where at 18 was his running mate in the backcourt, Sunday Deck. That's a question I don't have an answer for, but that's my answer to when people say, where were you at 18? Staying with Illawarra and LaMelo Ball, let's talk about Aaron Brooks. And I put this up on Twitter, and a few people got back to me, but I still want to put it out there, and I haven't quite come to a conclusion yet. So Here it is. Is it unfair to mention Aaron Brooks as a Ewing theory candidate? If you don't know what the Ewing theory is, I think it's started by Bill Simmons. It's the idea of addition by subtraction. When a star player leaves a team and they perform better. Brooks has gone out hurt and the Hawks look 10 times better. I think everyone would agree with that. A lot of it is to do with Sunday Dec and David Anderson coming into the starting lineup and getting bulk minutes. Blanchfield's look better involved. Boone is more active and involved and looks better. The ball is moving. It's not sticking. And also I'd say David Anderson and LaMelo Ball have become the most interesting and seemingly closest relationship on the team. Very student and master if you watch those two at play. Before that was seemingly Ball and Brooks, and now it's shifted to Ball and Anderson. I've never spoken to Aaron Brooks. I've never spoken to anyone at the Hawks, really. I would love to hear their thoughts on the idea of putting Brooks up as a Ewing theory candidate. Let's jump on. The Breakers, are they broken? The Brokers, I guess you could call them. There's been a lot of talk of culture, and yes, it's poor around the Breakers, but it's not their biggest problem, and I don't think by a long shot. Winning breeds culture more than culture breeds winning. I don't know if I'm justified in saying that, but I'm putting it out there anyway. Culture is important, but you need the talent, and you need that talent healthy. They haven't had the latter of that sentence. They've had terrible injuries to five key players. Chris Obekpe in the offseason, and then cut him and brought in Brandon Ashley. Rob Lowe with a fractured skull. Scotty Hobson's missed time. Finn Delaney's missed time. And now Corey Webster. So then my question then is, would the Sydney Kings be first overall with a record of 10 wins, 1 loss, if they had the equivalent injuries, which is to say if they were without Andrew Bogut, Daniel Kickett, Craig Moller, and Casper Ware in conjunction with Kevin Lish being out, who's injured on their team already? And the answer is most obviously no. Now, would they be 2-8? Probably not. But they sure as hell wouldn't be 10-1. They'd be right in the thick of the race. So when you start out with a lesser talent and then have all these injuries, you know, it's a simple equation. I think their biggest mistake hasn't been signing Glenn Rice Jr. and that snafu. It's been a couple of things. One is the recruiting over the top of Corey Webster. They didn't know what they had there. And as a result, they got Sek Henry and Hobson, who were very similar as somewhat of an insurance in case he didn't play well. And he's come out and outplayed not just them, but most people in the league. Imagine if that Hobson import spot was spent on a player like Cam Oliver or a big who can defend the hoop, because their biggest problem right now is interior defense and teams scoring on them in the paint at will. Then the other issue is the Braswell redundancy and Shamir's interrupted preseason. I think because Braswell was the head coach and they couldn't make him redundant or fire him, I don't know, Bradwell's never come out and said anything, that meant they couldn't quite bring in Shamir when they wanted to. He was left in limbo, came in late, the preseason's interrupted. You're just all of a sudden, you're playing catch up before the race has even begun. I think there's a more direct line between their injuries, roster construction, and interrupted preseason to explain their 2-8 record than there is between the link between that record and complimentary Crown Lagers at Perth Arena. Or a bar fight by an injury replacement. It's just my thought. Is that all the talking points I've got? Yeah, except for, of course, this one. This is the big one. Andre Lemanis has left the Boomers. He has resigned from the Boomers. He hasn't been fired by Basketball Australia. So that's the most important thing. And boy, this is a topic that gets people excited. As I was saying, most importantly, he didn't get fired, he resigned. And apparently he did so soon after the World Cup. There's a big difference between getting fired and resigning. From reading Matt Logue and Bodinage's articles, it's safe to assume that Lemanis was not enjoying the position. Why he wasn't enjoying the position remains to be fully understood, because Lemanis hasn't come out and said anything on the record. However, it's fair to say, based off of Lemanis's selections, rotations, and style of coaching and just manner, that there were fractions of the team that caused him a headache and he'd had enough. Now, whether it was as insidious as has been suggested, I don't know, probably, maybe not. A person would or could assume that those factors that have given, that have caused Lamanis the headache and made him consider resigning, more than likely those factors in no particular order, Ben Simmons and the huge weight of responsibility that comes with a player of that profile. Jonah Bolden, obviously that exit was not the most pleasant. He quit pre-tournament 2 weeks before they went to China, maybe even less than they went to China. And then the other NBA and international talent maybe weren't meshing with his style. I don't know. Most importantly, no Boomer player or staff has come out and refuted the rumors and what's been written in, say, Matt Logue's article. I'm pretty confident in Matt Logue. I think he's a really good writer and well-researched. I don't see any reason not to read into most of what he says or has written. People quoting Lamanis's coaching record, it's kind of erroneous. He hasn't been fired or quit, so there's no case to say, well, he was really good, why have you fired him? Because he hasn't done that, he's resigned. So what if he's the best coach we've ever had? It doesn't matter, he doesn't want the job. So that, I haven't understood people quoting that record and getting uppity about, oh, he's the best coach and all this sort of stuff. Well, that's not what we're debating here. People quoting that fourth place finishes and the win over the USA, it's a moot point. That's relevant if you've been fired. But so my suggestion then is to people who think he's been fired is you got to read the fine print. It would have been awfully dramatic had he been fired, but it didn't happen. Be responsible and don't concoct storylines and talking points. The interesting thing to see is what will Luke Longley do? A fiercely loyal West Australian, will he stay or will he go? Will Weaver, will he stay, will he go? Brett Brown is being soon to be named as his successor, apparently. That's been well reported. Seems an obvious choice with his NBA connections and certainly Simmons and Bolden connections. I wonder if Rob Beveridge was considered or even promoting Will Weaver from within was considered. As far as I look at it, Lamanis did a great job, fabulous job, and it would have been really nice to have seen him coach the team in Tokyo. Hopefully Brown will be able to wrangle, manage and instruct the Australian NBA talent in a FIBA tournament. I have every faith in Brett Brown and we'll see how he goes. But, you know, before and in most platforms, you know, we're talking about the culture of the Breakers. My question is, what is the culture in and around our national program with stuff like this going on? That's the question. I had an interview with Phil Smythe. He was coaching 2001. He gave me an impression of it, but, you know, that was almost two decades ago. So I'm sure things have changed. Have they changed for the better or worse or not at all? Only Andre Lamanis could tell you that. Now let's jump on to something a little bit of fun. A lot of people are doing NBL trades and who they'd trade for players and things like that. That's one way to put it, but we don't have trades in the NBL, so it's a difficult thing to do. Like the basketball show does it. And I thought, what's perhaps a better concept of a way of establishing need? Because really with an NBL trade or any trade system, what you're trying to work out is what this team has a deficit of and who would fill it. Now, because the NBL doesn't have trades, I've come up with my own idea. This week, I watched a really good movie, 1993's Indecent Proposal, starring Woody Harrelson, Demi Moore, and Robert Redford. Brilliant film. I got to see Demi Moore's breasts. Yep. I don't know if it was an accident or not, but they filmed it and it made the final cut. In the film, Robert Redford plays John Gage, who offers Woody Harrelson $1 million to sleep with his wife, Demi Moore. It's a story about sex versus love. It's a brilliant film. Definitely get it out. I watched it on Stan. Anyway, it got me thinking. If each owner had $1 million to offer another team for one player for the rest of the season, which player would they ask for? And as I said, what this exercise did for me was it helped me identify each team's need. What void or wish do these teams most need fulfilled? Let's go in ascending order through the table. So bottom place all the way to first place, Sydney Kings. Let's start with number 9. It's the New Zealand Breakers. I feel they need interior defense. So my thought is Matt Walsh picks up the phone and he calls Paul Smith of the Sydney Kings. And he picks up and he goes, hi Paul, this is Matt Walsh. Yeah, no, I got to be quick. This is my one phone call from the jailer. Listen, I'll give you $1 million if we the Breakers can have Andrew Bogut. That's who I think they would extend that wish to. Andrew Bogut, they need his defense. Number 8, Illawarra. To me, they need athleticism and toughness and youth in with a strength and athleticism in a youthful package. So Simon Stratfield picks up the phone, dials Tommy Greer of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Hello, Tommy. Simon, you awake? Great. I want to give you $1 million if you'll give me Mitch Creek. Ooh, Tommy Greer would have to, he'd sit up in his bed, put his spectacles on and have a drink of water. What? Have a good think about that. Number 7, Cairns Taipans. I think they need simply consistency. This team's got great talent. They've got up and down efforts. You know, sometimes effort is a symptom of not knowing how to be a professional, come out each time. Machado does it. They have a couple that go up and down. So they need consistency in my book. So Mark Beecroft, who I think is the owner of GM, I'm kind of jumping between the two, but it doesn't matter. He picks up the phone. He calls down to, well, he gives, Mark Beecroft gives Paul Smith a buzz on the phone, and he says, "Hi, Paul. Nice to speak to you again. I'll offer you $1 million for the rest of the season with Jay Sean Tate." Who knows whether to take it. Number 6, Brisbane Bullets. They need poise. They need someone who's just can control their team. I think the idea of getting a big is a mistake for them. I feel like they just need a guy who can play the orchestra and let everyone eat. So you can probably tell where this is going. So poise. So Kevin Martin and Richard Clark are on a conference call, and they call Mark Beecroft again of the Cairns Taipans, and they call and they say, "Hey, you know, ring, ring, ring. Hi, Mark. This is Richard Clark. What's that? No. Not the U.S. counterterrorism." Head of counterterrorism under Bush. No. Richard Clark of the Brisbane Bullets. Yeah, hi, how are you? Yeah, we need poise. I'll give you $1 million if we can have Scott Machado. Bang. Hang up. 5th, Adelaide 36ers. They need 3-point shooting. Grant Kelly picks up the phone. Grant Kelly's, I think, the owner of the 36ers. I had to Google it. Picks up the phone. He calls Hutchie of the Melbourne United. And he goes, "Hutchie, hello, are you there?" "Solo fortuna che c'haia." "Hutchie, I'll give you $1 million for Chris Golding." "We now come back for Pudu." Bang, hangs up the phone. Hutchie's thinking in his head. He doesn't know what to do. 4th. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, they need interior play. Tommy Greer picks up the phone and he makes a call to Mark Beecroft. These two have been in touch in the past, I think. No, not quite. He picks up the phone and he says, "Mark Beecroft of the Cairns Taipans, I want to give you $1 million for just one chance at Cam Oliver." Bang, hangs up. Interior play taken care of. Benson, it's not working for whatever reason. 3rd place, Melbourne United. They don't need a lot. They look pretty good. But if I had to establish a need for them, it would be perimeter defense and fit. So Melbourne United's Hutchie calls Jack Bendat of the Perth Wildcats and says, "Hello, is that Jack Bendat? Yeah, Jack. Hello, Jack. Jack, it's me, Hutchie. No, Hutchie. Hutchie, I'm calling about the Wildcats." "No, not Wild Hats, Cats, the team you own." "Yeah, I want to offer you $1 million for Tarico White. I want perimeter defense and a guy who's going to fit in and not take too many shots." "All right, Jack, what's that?" "Well, why is it? All right, okay. No, I'm not going to tell you how to work email. You're too old. Bye."
"Can I come too?"
Hangs up. 2nd, Perth Wildcats. They need size. Dario Hunt's a little undersized and he's struggling. So Jack Bendat gets his nurse to pick up the phone and he calls. I don't know if he's using a phone with a crank on it or one of those, you know, those old style phones, or sends up a smoke screen, whatever they did 200 years ago. It was Jack calls Simon Stratford of the Illawarra Hawks. To be honest, Jack had probably, at his age, he'd probably either write a letter or a telegram. Dear Simon, stop. This is Jack Bendat, owner of the Perth Wildcats. Stop. I'll offer you $1 million. Stop. For Josh Boone, stop. I think Josh Boone would be a really good pickup for the Perth Wildcats. Defensive-minded guy, set in pick and rolls. He's got his activity back. I could have said any number. I could have said Sean Long, but I think like Boone is the guy who probably best suits their needs if they're going to hang on to Dario Hunt. Anyway, that's that one. And then the number one team, the Sydney Kings, gosh, they don't need anything. They just need to retain everyone they've got and not lose Didi to the NBA. They need, in my eyes, if they need anything, three-point shooting, consistent three-point shooting, and another complement player. So Paul Smith picks up the phone, and he's got two phones to his head. On his left ear, he's got Matt Walsh of the New Zealand Breakers. On his right ear, he's got Grant Kelly of the 36ers. And he says, guys, I'll give you $1 million if I can have either Corey Webster or Anthony Drimmick. And whoever, which one of them says yes to the $1 million first. I think Anthony Drimmick would be the guy they'd most want. Super defender, hitting shots. He's having a great year, Anthony Drimmick. Absolutely loving watching him play. That was Indecent Proposals. Let's go preview of next round, round 9. This is an interesting one. All of these betting lines are brought to you by my good friends at topsport.com.au, I think. Friday night, Cairns, $2.62, host Melbourne, $1.49. I am tipping Melbourne to go up there and win. Going with the favourite there. Cairns aren't as good as Melbourne, and that's my reason. Saturday, there's two games. First of which, New Zealand Breakers at $1.57 host the Illawarra Hawks, $2.40. This is a tough one, but I'm going with Illawarra. On the proviso that Corey Webster's not going to play, he seemed to turn that ankle pretty bad. I don't think he's done any structural damage. In fact, he's had scans, and it's revealed no break or anything. But he's still... I think he'll still sit a game, and if he sits this one, I don't think New Zealand have got a chance. I think Illawarra will win over there. Especially, hopefully, they don't drop the ball after the game they played last time. Brisbane Bullets, $1.67, host the South East Melbourne Phoenix, $2.20. Bit surprised to see this one not near parity. I'm picking the South East Melbourne Phoenix. I like that team. I just think Creek, Patterson, great matchup. Robertson, yeah, it's going to be a tough ask for Brisbane. But also don't forget, this is the first time Creek's coming up against Lemanis, I believe, in Brisbane. Or maybe at all. Think at all, first time Creek sort of gets to show his wares right in front of the guy who, for whatever reason, didn't pick him in the FIB World Cup team initially. Sunday night, two great games, I think. This is the day of the round. So if you're trying to portion your time this weekend, leave time aside for this one. Sydney, $1.62, host the Melbourne United, $2.39. I'm tipping Sydney in this one. They're the favourites, but also Melbourne are on the second of a back-to-back, having travelled from Melbourne to Cairns down to Sydney. It's not a huge travel schedule, but it'll be enough, and especially against the Kings, you need everything you can get. And then later on Sunday, there is Perth, $1.30, host Adelaide, $3.50. So Adelaide are the furthest from the mark, or the biggest roughie this week. I'm going with Perth at home. There's a reason why a team as good as Adelaide, who are around that sort of 4-5-6 conversation, are $3.50 to beat them in Perth. By all accounts, Tirico White is going to play. He didn't train with the team today, but he's been, I've heard this on Josh Garlett's Twitter account, that he's likely to play. And if he plays and they're back to full strength at home, they'll win. But Adelaide are good. That would be at $3.50. That's kind of interesting to have a think about. Adelaide don't seem to be too intimidated. They seem to really embrace that Red Army crowd over there. That is everything from this episode of the NBL Pocket Podcast. Thank you very much and goodbye. Rate, review, and subscribe. Follow me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D. That's on Twitter and Instagram. Sometimes post stuff on Instagram. I don't think it's particularly useful or good, but shucks, why not? and then Facebook and YouTube as well. Been trying to get out more video content, but it's harder than it looks. Thanks very much, everyone, and I will see you on the next episode, and enjoy this round of games.